Micah Parsons has been traded in a blockbuster deal. Is it the biggest trade in NFL history? We'll break down the why of it next. It's time for Inside Coverage right now. Welcome to Inside Coverage. I'm Jason Fitz, and I can't imagine what we're going to be talking about tonight. You know what this show does. It's the how and the why of everything that's happening in the NFL, and we're here with you on Yahoo Sports Networks. You can be watching us at yahoosports.tv. You might be watching us in the YouTube channel. Either way, we are incredibly thankful you are here, and I get to spend the next hour hanging out with not only one of my closest friends, but somebody that, frankly, I cannot wait to rip all of this up with, Frank Schwab, Jason Fitz. Frank, look, I was already excited to get to hang out with my guy. Come back on Inside Coverage, have ourselves a night. And then all of a sudden, we're just sitting here. I'm feeding the dogs. I'm cleaning the house. And bam, we get one of the biggest trades we've seen in this generation in the NFL as Micah Parsons is no longer a Dallas Cowboy. He is now a Green Bay Packer. He is headed to Green Bay. You see the tweet there from Shefty. Parsons and the Packers already have reached agreement on a four-year, $188 million contract. Ooh, had a hand in the trade. So you see how it all went down. A ton of money. But first and foremost, if you are a Cowboys fan right now, Frank, you are in shock.
Absolutely. But before I get to that, because you said the biggest trade of our generation, and I just tweeted this out. I think it's actually the biggest trade ever. And I'm going to tell you why. NFL history. You could say, oh, what about the Herschel Walker trade? That was all these players. And we're living in a different time where NFL is 24/7 now. Everybody's paying attention to the NFL constantly. Even the Khalil Mack trade, very similar. Khalil Mack, defensive player of the year, probably on his way to Hall of Fame someday. This wasn't the Dallas Cowboys making this trade, though. The Dallas Cowboys trading a superstar at the peak of his powers for two first-round picks. It doesn't really compare to any other NFL trade as far as the reaction, as far as how much we're going to talk about it. The Herschel Walker trade happened. You read about it in a newspaper the next day. That's awesome. Great. A relic from the past. This is one we're literally, this blows the Luka Doncic trade out of the water because it's the NFL and it's the Cowboys. And this is the team we all talk about 24/7. I really, truly think, Fitz, this is the biggest trade in NFL history, just as far as the amount of attention it's going to get, the amount of eyes it's going to get, the amount of people talking about it is going to get. Like, this is just unprecedented, basically, for the Dallas Cowboys to make a move like this. Am I wrong? Am I crazy? Am I just living off the vapors of the high of hearing about this trade? Because it just seems massive to me in the moment.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time figuring out in the top of my head a bigger trade. And also, I'm having a really hard time trying to think of, and you're a great historian, Frank. When is the last time you can remember a team traded away their best player? And don't get it twisted, Micah Parsons is the best player on Dallas's roster, or was the best player on Dallas's roster. When's the last time a team traded away their best player and got immediately better? Like, because at the end of the day, right, they get Kenny Clark, yeah, the defensive tackle, in return, and two first-round picks, a 26 and a 27, to which I say, who cares? Like, if you're a Cowboys fan, you were just sitting here a year ago and it was, we're all in, we're all in. You've watched your organization drag their feet to sign their quarterback and their wide receiver. You've watched all of this money go out, and we've just presumed all summer, I've presumed all summer now incorrectly, that they would simply get it done because that's what Jerry does. What Jerry has just done is he's made it tougher for the Cowboys to win a Super Bowl in the first year with Schottenheimer as a head coach. So now, an organization that always seems to have some expectations, whether it's warranted or not, and a man that always comes out and talks about Super Bowls, has just made it more difficult for the very franchise he runs to win a Super Bowl. Like, I can't make this. I don't care about Jerry's money. I don't care about the future cap. I don't care about any of that. What just got tougher is the Cowboys' ability to actually compete in their own division.
Absolutely. I'm 100% with you on this one. And, you know, I play in fantasy leagues. You play in fantasy leagues. And if you get a 3-for-1 offer, just hit reject immediately. You know why? Because the one is always way better than the three pieces you're getting back. And look, the Cowboys didn't get nothing in this trade. This wasn't the Luka trade where you're like, okay, they sold for pennies on a dollar. No, the Cowboys got something back for sure. Kenny Clark is a good player. The two first-round picks, it's rare to see any player go for two first-round picks. but start to think about this. Kenny Clark last year at age 28 had one sack. He's been a good player, three-time Pro Bowler, but he's 29. He's not making the impact Micah Parsons is, obviously. Those picks the Packers sent over, they might be number 32. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that later in the show. But the Packers are going to be one of the best teams in the NFL this season. They were without Micah Parsons. So you're look at the guy, the people drafted from, like, let's say 26 to 32. Are there some huge hits in there? Yeah, there are. But mostly it's just solid guys. Like, okay, wow, we found a really good starting linebacker there. It's not the Micah Parsons of the world. Heck, it fits. If you were to tell me both of these picks are top 10, right? I still would say, all right, that's cool. The chances of one of those guys being Micah Parsons, still pretty low. That's just the way it is. Micah Parsons is, we use the term a lot, generational. It's hard to replace him. And even when you go back to the Raiders trade with the Khalil Mack trade, they got a lot back. You look at what they really got, though, the picks. I think one of those picks was Josh Jacobs, a fine player, a good player. You would never in a million years trade Josh Jacobs or Khalil Mack straight up. Khalil Mack has been way more valuable through his career. And I think the same thing is going to happen here, where we're going to look 5 years down the road and we're going to say, yeah, they got two first-round picks and Kenny Clark. And it was never close to being equal value because Micah Parsons went on to the Hall of Fame. I think Micah Parsons going to Hall of Fame. I think he's going Defensive Player of the Year some year. You're just not, maybe, look, Mary, the Cowboys have drafted really, really well. I want to give Jerry credit for that. So maybe they turn these draft picks into gold and something that we look back and say, okay, yeah, it was worth trading Micah Parsons in his prime. I don't think so, Fitz. I just think you traded for three pieces where you're like, okay, they're fine, but they're not Micah Parsons.
The night before Khalil Mack was traded, I was on radio at ESPN at the time. And I went on radio and there were all these rumors going everywhere. And I said, look, there's a 0% chance the Raiders are trading Khalil Mack. Why? Because at that time, John Gruden, particularly not known for wanting young players, likes veteran players. And he was clearly the best player on their roster. I laughed about it. I woke up the next morning in my tiny apartment in Bristol at the time. And I looked at my phone and I immediately said, what happened in my life that I have hundreds of texts from people? And it was just everybody I've ever worked with, everybody I've ever toured with, everybody I've ever done a show with, just outwardly laughing at me over and over and over again. Cowboys fans, I've lived your misery. Like, I want you to understand this, because misery is the appropriate reaction. When you have one of the best players in the NFL, when you have a transcendent player, and you simply decide to let him walk, even if you're a bad team, that's a hard pill to swallow. What do you do now? When you are in the same division as the defending Super Bowl champions, like without Micah Parsons, I'm sorry, I am not putting the Cowboys anywhere near the same shelf of liquor. When we talk about like where they are, right, top shelf, right. Philadelphia Eagles, the Cowboys are a heck of a lot closer to well today than they are to top shelf without Micah Parsons. This defense is not going to be as good without Micah Parsons. These aren't hot takes. You mentioned earlier, like he's a Defensive Player of the Year candidate every single year he steps on the field. He and Reggie White are the only two players in NFL history to come out and get 12 sacks in each of their first 4 years for a reason. And when you let someone like that walk, what have you just done? You've told your entire organization you're not serious about winning. You've told your entire locker room that you care more about saving a little bit of cash than you do about actually getting things done the right way and helping your team win. You've told your new coach, yeah, it's going to be tougher from you. And you've told your entire fan base that you're acknowledging, you're accepting that this year, because we're talking about Kenny Clark this year, right? This year, fine. Those two first-round picks, they don't matter this year. So you're now telling Cowboys fans this year that your best case scenario is probably third place in your own division. Like that is not, it is time to change the conversation forever about how we view the Cowboys and their desperation to win, because we just learned today the Cowboys are actually not serious about winning football games right now.
It's a great point. I'm going to circle back to that, but I want to hit on this. Because I was very dismissive yesterday and even through today, people texting me, friends, whatever. We even talked about it real quick on Inside Coverage last night. Hey, the Packers, they got a shot to get him. John Kuhn, their former fullback, texted like, Micah Parsons, keep an eye on this. And I was like, whatever. Like, maybe, yes, I doubt it. Because you know why, Fitz? Because it was inconceivable to me that Jerry Jones would trade Micah Parsons. I kept thinking like, all right, this is a big show and we're going to get to the end of the show and it's going to be Micah, just like Terry McLaurin a few days ago, smiling as he signs the contract. The Cowboys tweeted out, hey, everybody's happy. And I just couldn't wrap my head around the idea of Jerry Jones trading a 26-year-old Micah Parsons in his prime, practically no matter what he got back, unless it was this is an unprecedented offer in NFL history, which it really wasn't. It was a Khalil Mack offer. Like that's what it was. And so I have a bunch of buddies texted me back today, like, boy, were you wrong? And I'm like, yeah, I was, because I never thought Jerry Jones would trade Micah because, as you said, it doesn't get him any closer to a Super Bowl that they've been chasing for almost 30 years now. It actually sets them back. And unless you just nail these first round picks, which you might, but like you said, you got to wait 2 years for one of these first round picks. Those first round picks aren't going to be that valuable. And now we got to take everything that Jerry Jones says kind of at a different face value. All in, famously, a year and a half ago. You ain't all in if you're trading Micah Parsons. If you're letting your ego get involved, and I want to talk about that too, because I just wrote about that. If you're letting your ego get involved in this whole kerfuffle you had with Micah Parsons, you're not really serious about winning. You're not serious about putting your best football team out there. The Dallas Cowboys are simply not better without Micah Parsons. And anyway, I'll believe it when I see it. Let's put it that way. They are much further away from a Super Bowl than they were a few hours ago when they traded Micah Parsons. You just don't replace a Micah Parsons. You win Super Bowls with elite top shelf guys and you fill in around them. They had Dak, they had CeeDee, and they had Micah. And if you want to get it done under the salary cap, they could have. Look, Jerry already basically said, I already agreed to a deal with them to make them the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. So it wasn't like this was some salary cap thing where you're just like, oh, we can't make this work. This was just Jerry getting in his own way and making the Cowboys worse. And I don't know how he spins this. I don't know how he sells this to fans as a good thing. This is going to look, Mavs games, right? For the rest of the season, everybody's chanting fire Nico Harrison. You can't fire Jerry Jones, but they're going to be chanting at a Cowboys games. I can't imagine a fan base is even close to being okay with this. I think there's going to be just kind of a revolt almost against Jerry Jones. I can't wait to see how he spins this.
I mean, let's talk about pride and ego, because how much of this is based on the fact that Jerry did think he had a deal. And according to some reports that came out today, that deal was around $40.5 million a year, right? So if you do the quick math, $40.5 million is roughly what, $164 million, and instead he gets 188. So yeah, that's $24-25 million difference. That's a big
but
difference.
That's how it ended up, but I don't think that's how it played out in the moment. I think, and I don't know, I'm just guessing here. Speculation is bad, as Siciliano talked about yesterday, but I'm going to do it anyway. My assumption is if Jerry just goes to the agent and is like, all right, we got $40.5 million a year, and David Mulligan, I can't pronounce his name. Parsons agent. Yeah, I always get it wrong, and I hate doing it. We'll do it for $42 a year because that's $1 million more than TJ Watt. Isn't that what you think would happen? Like, yeah, the Packers came over the top. Like, they went all in with this $47 million offer. Good for them. But that wasn't necessary. I don't think that was what Parsons was asking for in the moment. I think he would have been fine with $42-43 million a year. That's Jerry could have got this deal done if he wanted, right?
But even if it took this offer, and I've got the numbers in front of me, $62 million in the first year of the deal, $120 million fully guaranteed, a total of $136 million guaranteed, all records for non-quarterbacks. Even if that's what it takes, this is where fans can easily say, yeah, but look at the total amount of money. I would ask everybody to consider the difference, the gap in spending, because as we've covered ad nauseum for how long, this deal could have been done with Micah a while ago. They chose not to do it. They chose to wait. They also chose to wait on CeeDee and they chose to wait on Dak. So as a result, they're overpaying a lot of people because they didn't get to the market first. It's like waiting too long to buy a house and all of a sudden the market blows up in front of you, right? So all of these mistakes stack up. But then the other portion of it is even just looking at this deal as a whole, if you're telling me right now that the difference is $6-7 million a year, find the $7 million a year. Like just find it. Instead of looking at it and saying, oh my God, you can't pay somebody that much money. That's what we all hear. You hear $62 million, you're like, oh, you can't pay that. Okay. Well, what were they willing to spend and what was the true gap? Because if the true gap over the course of 4 years is about $24 million, quick math again, that's about $6 million a year. So you're willing. Right now, in year one with Schottenheimer, with the defense that desperately needs your help, with the Jerry Jones that frankly is not getting any younger waiting for a Super Bowl window, you're willing to let $6 million be the difference between, I think, being at least on the fringe of the playoffs and now being a team. Like, to me, this defense is nowhere near good enough to get the Cowboys to the playoffs. Nowhere near. So no, all of a sudden, you lose the impactful
Parsons.
Piece.
It was bad.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. Like, this was
for $6 million
without Micah Parsons. For $6 million. And Fitz, do you really think it's money with Jerry Jones here? Do you really think he was like,
no, it's pride. It's pride.
Malagetta came in here and said, exactly. It's not like, I doubt this happened this way, but let's even envision it. Malagetta comes in and says, no, we think we can get $47 million a year. Jerry's like, whoa, 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 that's way too expensive for me. I don't think that's how this played out. Jerry's never been shy about spending money on his product. Like, he makes a ton of money and he spends a lot of money. That's really never been his problem. I think this, and we have talked about this on Inside Coverage all month. Like, this has been a constant theme that it was so strange that Jerry Jones just decided, hey, I got this handshake deal done with Micah. He needs to honor this. We didn't have the agent in the room. Well, Jerry, that's not how deals work in the NFL. If a guy has an agent, you got to go through him. That's just how it goes. Like, he knows better than that. I talked about this yesterday. Why he got so stuck on this point is beyond me, but it became this weird personal thing where he's saying, I don't even know the agent's name. Come on, David Mulligetta is one of the biggest time agents in sports. Like, that's ridiculous. You're just making things adversarial for no reason at all. And then he shares, as we talked about it, when we were, me, Charles, and Ben Fox were in Vegas, the story broke that, you know, Jerry goes on Michael Irvin's podcast and says, hey, we sent the details to the agent. And the agent told us to stick it up our behind. That, like, why even share that, for one? And that's what the agent should say, Jerry. Like, you know that better than that. But he's telling this story almost with glee. Like, he's got a smile on his face when he's telling this story. Like, I'm going to get you. It just became this really strange personal battle between the agent. I don't even think it's Mike. I think it's the agent and Jerry. Jerry refusing to acknowledge the agent's existence, taking shots at the agent. This is just how business is done. I don't know. Like, Jerry Jones, who, look, his ego has brought him to great heights. He is the most valuable franchise in sports in the entire world. And Jerry's ego is a big part of the reason why. He's a phenomenal businessman. I would never take that away from him. But in this particular instance, his ego is why Micah Parsons is not on this team anymore. He could have gotten a deal done if he wanted to. The salary cap is not an issue. Cash is certainly not an issue for the Dallas Cowboys. This is Jerry Jones getting in a peeing match with the agent when you didn't have to. Just do a deal like every other NFL team would have done a deal here. It would have gotten done. The reason Micah Parsons is not a Dallas Cowboy anymore, and he won't be for the rest of his great, what I think is going to be Hall of Fame career, is because Jerry Jones' ego got in the way here. I'm convinced of that. And you won't convince me otherwise.
It took a long time after the passing of Al Davis. It has taken a long time for people to remember what Al did early in his career in the NFL that made him such a huge part of NFL legacy, right? Like, in so many ways, at the end of his life, he was really defined by many of the mistakes. And that was the largest narrative that was loudly spoken when Al Davis passed. It took a minute, and the Raiders have never been the same, right? I look at Jerry, and I'm left to wonder, honestly, if Micah Parsons goes to the Packers this year, wins a Super Bowl, becomes the defensive player of the year, starts a run that he's fully capable of at 26 years old in the next 6 years of being one of, if not the most dominant players on the defensive side of the ball in the entire NFL, while the Packers year in and year out reap the rewards, and the Cowboys are stuck as they have been for 30 plus years in this sea of suck. If that's what happens here, I think it is fair to start to question how much we will look at the moves that Jerry made at the end of his time with the Cowboys and how that impacts the legacy. We talk about it all the time for athletes, so let's at least acknowledge it for owners too. Sometimes what you do at the end of your legacy does and should impact the way we have conversations about what you've meant to the league overall. And Jerry certainly has meant more to monetization to the NFL than anybody in history. And it's fair to talk about his branding and his marketing and all of those things, Frank. But right now, when we're talking about the Cowboys, if this goes as badly as I think it can go, I think it's very fair at the end of all of it to look at it and say, man, Jerry really did some things at his end of the time with the Cowboys that we have to consider in context when we talk about how influential he was to the league and the imprint he left on the NFL forever.
Yeah, we're so aware as sports fans now that, and I feel bad for Dallas fans, keep bringing up the Mavs Luka Doncic trade. When you hear the name Nico Harrison, the first thing you're going to think of in 20 years is that's the guy who traded Luka. Jerry, I'm not saying that Jerry's going to go in that bucket, because Jerry's done a lot of things in the NFL. He has three rings, and I mean, his story, like, it's a Netflix documentary at this point, right? Like, he's done a lot more than just one trade. But I do think by the end, like you talk, I think Al Davis is a pretty good comp. Al Davis, one of the great figures in NFL history. But yet when you say the name Al Davis, you think of that, but you also think about, oh man, all those draft picks at the end, Jamarcus Russell and Darius Hayward Bay, and just a ridiculous moves the Raiders were making at the end. And you do have to wonder, is that where we're going with Jerry here? Are we going to be like, man, I got to trade away Micah Parsons and the Packers won 3 Super Bowls? That's not out of the question, by the way. We'll talk about the Packers. Don't worry, Packers fans, we're getting there. But yes, this is one of those moves. This is why I think this is one of the biggest trades in NFL history, because this is one of those trades we're going to be talking about in 20 years. We're going to remember where we were when this trade was made. Like, that's how big this trade is. I can't tell you where I was when the Jay Cutler trade was made, but I'll be able to tell you where I was when I heard about this one. And you're right. How can it not impact his legacy a little bit? If, again, who knows? Maybe the Cowboys turn these 2 first-round picks and Kenny Clark into a Super Bowl. We don't know how it's going to turn out. But if it turns out we think it might turn out, how does this not impact his legacy? How do you not, when you think about Jerry Jones and everything he's done in the NFL, also think of him as the guy who traded Micah Parsons away when he was 26 years old?
Packers fans of a certain age remember where they were when Reggie White made history and signed with Green Bay. They now also will remember where they were the day that Micah Parsons was traded to the Packers. What does it mean for Green Bay? Are we putting Green Bay suddenly at the upper echelon and the tier of Super Bowl caliber team? We'll answer the Green Bay Packers side of it after we take a quick break. Welcome back to Inside Coverage. He's Frank Schwab. I'm Jason Fitz. And obviously the big breaking news, Micah Parsons is now a Green Bay Packer. And Frank, I could hear all the way in my head, I could hear Packers fans screaming, "Get to us," which is what we're going to do now. We've talked about the abject disaster this thing feels like for the Cowboys. But if you are a Packers fan, man, I'm just going to be honest here for a second. I can give you a laundry list of yeah buts. You know I love that phrase. Yeah buts for the Lions, right? Like new coordinators, couple of new offensive linemen, little nervous about what things look like for Detroit. I can give you a laundry list of yeah buts that mostly are focused on J.J. McCarthy with the Vikings for sure. The Bears got question marks. Will Caleb and Ben actually come together quickly? First time heck. Like I can stack questions for the rest of the division. All of a sudden, boom. Checkmate, like just out of the blue, the Packers, who have quietly gone through this offseason, come in and remind everybody that they have every right at this point to now especially be the favorite in the division and certainly one of the favorites for the Super Bowl.
No doubt about it at all. And when going back to my previews, which take a drink, it fits. Mentioning my previews on a show we're doing together, I kind of cast the Packers as this team that was just good enough. Like they weren't going to be good enough to make a Super Bowl because they just didn't have the elite players to get over the hump. If you think about last year, they had a great year, but they were winless against the Lions, the Vikings, and the Eagles, 0-6 against those teams, including the playoffs. And you just looked at that roster and you said, they have so many good players, very good players. They don't have any great players. They don't have that dude. Like, maybe it's Xavier McKinney. I really like Xavier McKinney. Don't get me wrong, but I can't tell you too many Super Bowl champions where a free safety has been their best player. Like that's just, it just doesn't happen that often. No disrespect to Ed Reed, by the way. It just was like, this Packers team is just good enough to be like 2 games behind the Lions or to lose to the Eagles in an uncompetitive playoff game because they don't have that alpha. They don't have that dude. They got that dude now. I'll tell you, they got the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history on their team. Mike is a game changer for them. And yes, they had to get rid of Kenny Clark. That hurts. Kenny Clark's a very, very good player. But Micah tips the field. And he will make such a difference for that team. He bridges the gap between them and the Lions for sure, in my mind. Like, this is, all of a sudden, I was like, we're overlooking the Lions. Lions are a really good team. The Lions went 15-2 last year. Now I'm like, man, the Packers have every right to think that they're eye-to-eye with them because of Micah Parsons. And you think, this is a team that, no team doesn't need first-round picks, of course, but if you think about a team that really didn't need late first round picks, it's the Packers. They don't have any holes. Like, I kept looking at this roster. It was a conundrum for me, this Packers roster, because I kept looking at it saying, this team has no weaknesses and they're too deep. Like, they are so good from top to bottom, but yet I can't get them to 13, 14 wins in a Super Bowl just because they don't have that dude. This is a game changer. This is, I mean, I already had a buddy, shout out to all my Wisconsinites out there. Had a buddy, Jed, by the way, text me like, this is just the same as the Packers getting Reggie White, right? Like, this is it. Like, and I was like, look, Reggie, I have so much respect for Reggie, one of the three greatest defensive players of all time, but it's not that far off either. It feels the same. I remember where I was when I heard the Packers landed Reggie White. That was a different deal. He kind of changed the franchise, which was very downtrodden at that point. This is just taking the Packers from, okay, we're good enough to make the playoffs, and maybe if we get lucky, to, hey, we should feel like we're the Super Bowl favorites right now. I don't think that that's that crazy for Packers fans to think that.
The Green Bay Packers, according to the worldwide internet, are the youngest team in the NFL right now with an average age of
about
25.2.
Trade. And got younger with this trade, which is crazy.
They are... It's the third straight year, too, that they've been the youngest roster in the NFL. So what does that tell us? To your point, if there's ever been a team that isn't desperate for draft picks, it's a young football team, right? Like, now they're about to have some people graduate into the point that they're going to have to get paid. They're going to have to work some things around. But this is where, again, let's credit a little bit of how the Packers did business. They invested early on Jordan Love. So now, you know, relative to the market over the course of the next few years, Jordan Love's going to be a discount compared to what it'd be if they'd done the Dak thing and waited and waited and waited, right? So if you're a Packers team that's young, you're a Packers team that's talented, you're a Packers team that has quietly one of the better head coaches. I genuinely have been so impressed with LaFleur and the job that he's done. And they've done such a good job of just doing this thing the right way, slow and steady. And then to your point, they go out and they do the one thing you have to do if you truly want to be elite. Because what did we learn? What did we learn from Philadelphia last year in a copycat NFL? We learned that you have got to have a disruptive defensive line if you want to win a Super Bowl, right? The best quarterback lost the biggest game last year because the defense he went up against was too good, right? That's just a reality here. So again, if I'm the Packers and I'm looking around and I'm saying, okay, if I want to take down the Eagles, I'm going to have a game record. I'm going to have that person that everybody stops and says, man, the one thing we have to account for is, and the answer to that now is Micah Parsons. So you put Parsons on a defense where he can be the immediate difference maker. He is where they can use him all over the field because, frankly, he is a chess piece for any defensive coordinator to be able to get some versatility out of, right? And you put him on a team that feels like they really have a solid young core to build around. This is what's remarkable about this move, Frank, is this is not just about today. I think the Packers went out and made themselves a better Super Bowl contender today. And even with the loss of two first-round picks, they're going to be a better Super Bowl contender for the next several years because of this move.
Because of what you're talking about, the youngest, they were when they won a playoff game at Dallas, of all places, 2 years ago. I believe this fact anyway. It's been in my previews that they were the youngest team average age to ever win a playoff game. They're still that young. They're still one of the three youngest teams in the NFL, I believe. So you're right. They opened up their kind of Super Bowl window here for 3-4 years, probably. And that's hard to do with one acquisition, but they have set themselves up so well where they, at some point, Brian Gutekunst just had to push all of his chips in and say, okay, we're here. We're going all in. That's how you go all in, Jerry. You actually go all in. And that's what the Packers did in some ways here. And not in a dangerous way, not in an irresponsible way. Again, these first-round picks, yes, they're valuable. They might be number 32, one of them at least. Like, that's how good the Packers are going to be. Real quick, I don't know if you've kind of memorized the week one schedule in the NFL, but you know the Packers play week one?
No.
Detroit at Green Bay week one. What a banger that is. Oh, my goodness, right out of the gate. That is going to be one of the most anticipated regular season games in the long, great history of the Green Bay Packers, because you've got the Lions coming in, who've been talking some trash. You got Micah Parsons, I presume, making his debut. He should have enough time now to get ready to at least play a fair amount of snaps in week one. And you get the Lions right away at home at Lambeau. Like, goodness gracious. And then we get Ravens versus Bills Sunday night. I'm going to pass out pretty soon. I'm so excited over this. But let me ask you, because I don't know the answer in my own head yet. I'll think it through, and I'm going to listen to what you have to say. If you had to pick somebody to win the NFC North right now, who would it be? Would it be the Lions, Vikings, or Bears? They're not bad.
It's the Packers.
Packers, wow.
It's the Packers.
That quickly.
I can't,
Lions went 15-2 last year, Fitz. Like,
I mean, but you and I talk about this all the time. Like, I love proof of concept, and there's no proof of concept right now. Like, Lions fans, I know you guys feel like you're still in this window, and I want that. I want that for Detroit. I want that, you know, for any fan base that has just had to suffer. I think, my God, the Lions winning a Super Bowl would be one of the greatest stories in sports history, right? Like, we all want that. But, man, anytime you change coordinators, what do we learn from Philly? We learn that sometimes it goes really well and sometimes it goes really poorly. So, for me, when I'm looking at, all right, you've got massive changes on the offensive line and you've got new coordinators. Now, I know Amon-Ra St. Brown told our own, you know, Jory Epstein that, like, look, the guys that are coaching now, they know ball. Of course. What's everybody going to say in the beginning? Like, until we see it, I just can't believe it. Like, same with J.J. McCarthy. I have the same questions today that I had about J.J. when he was drafted. Is he that guy? I don't know. Like, who really knows? So I'm looking around. I'm thinking, well, the Packers came into this already with the least questions. And now, my God, how do you beat a quarterback? You knock the snot out of them. And their ability in week one to just be able to disrupt Jared Goff. I mean, if you're the Lions, your game planning got so much more difficult in that game, didn't it? Like, are you not on the same page with the Packers here?
Lions are really good. This was a 15-2 team, but this is why I'm going to go back to me making this stupid statement that this is the biggest trade of all time. Usually when a trade is made, it affects both teams that are involved in the trade, and maybe there's some strays caught here and there. This, think about how this affects the Lions. All of a sudden, the Lions go from, we're definitely winning the NFC North again, right? Like, yeah, we're Super Bowl favorite too. Oh man, like, our job just got a lot tougher. What if this closes? It doesn't close, but what if we look back 5 years from now and say, that Lions window closed in part because the Packers got Micah Parsons and became much, much better. And think about the Vikings who were like loading up. Like, they went 14-3 last year, by all accounts have, I think, a top five roster in the NFL. All of a sudden you're saying, well, ooh, wow, Packers look really, really tough now. The Bears have been building this thing for a few years to say, okay, we're adding all these picks, we're making these additions to our offensive line, we got Caleb, we just hired Ben Johnson, we feel really good. And who did the Packers just get? What did that just come across the wire? We just heard that. Like, I think this affects the entire division. Is this the best division ever? Like, you could make a great case. I mean, a 15-2 team and a 14-3 team come back pretty much intact, and we're talking about another team winning that division? I'm going to pick the Lions right now as we sit here. I might change my mind in the next week. We'll see. Because I think the Lions have been a little disrespected because this was a 15-2 team last year. It had a ton of defensive injuries. The Packers are adding Micah Parsons, and the Lions are saying, we're adding Aiden Hutchinson. Don't forget, we didn't have him for most of the last season.
That's a really good point.
I still think the Lions are better, but not by much anymore. I thought it was a pretty sizable gap before. Like I said, I didn't think the Packers had the alphas, really, to beat the Lions. Now they got Micah Parsons, who's a game changer. But again, Fitz, Detroit at Green Bay week one. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding? We get to watch this in 10 days. I can't wait.
Let me go back to something you said earlier that I think becomes really clear and important today. You mentioned a name that we don't talk about a lot in Brian Gutekunst, the GM of the Packers. Now, Gutekunst made news.
I don't say that name a lot because I can't pronounce it. That's why. I can't pronounce his name. Really, that's hard. Why I don't like to say it.
Yeah, it's really hard. We're going to call him Gutekunst. Look,
Goody. Goody's fine.
Goody. We'll go Goody. He made the news a lot several years ago because Aaron Rodgers didn't like the way things went down at the end of his time there and the drafting of Jordan Love and didn't like the communication. And, I mean, I've been doing this long enough at this point to remember when there were a lot of people screaming that he should get fired for the way all of that went down with Aaron Rodgers and just how poorly it was handled and just the perception around the organization and what the hell does he know? And it even felt like Aaron Rodgers was spending a lot of time throwing shade at this GM, and a lot of people sort of bought it hook, line, and sinker, but the Packers didn't. And what's interesting is all the way back then, when Jordan Love was drafted, the Packers made an organizational decision that they were more comfortable putting their future in the hands of their new GM than they were putting their future in the hands of Aaron Rodgers. And at the time, there were a lot of question marks about why they were doing it that way, especially with LaFleur coming in as a new coach. Like, we were all kind of looking around saying, what in the heck are they doing in Green Bay? And now here we sit a few years later, as we've mentioned, one of, if not the youngest roster in the NFL. You've got a quarterback that they've invested in that they believe is the answer. You've got some young talent all around that team that they want to build. They went in last year and aggressively got themselves Josh Jacobs, who had a really nice year for them. And now today they turn around and they just absolutely make the aggressive move to go all in. And I feel today better about the Packers than I have felt about any team Aaron Rodgers has played for the last several years. So it is stunning to me that as much as the narrative a few years ago was that Gutekunst didn't deserve to keep his job, we're sitting here today and I'm like, man, if this works out for Green Bay, I think he's going to be sitting around saying, wait a minute, I deserve to be in the conversation for NFL Executive of the Year. Like, it is crazy to see that the Packers saw well before any of the rest of us did that they had somebody they believed in that they are letting shape this roster. And right now, it looks like they are truly playing chess while a lot of people are playing checkers.
Isn't that the truth? Look what one move can do. And it's that's the thing. You can make, let me give you a little Green Bay history, the modern history anyway. 1992, Ron Wolf, he was hired in 91, but he starts basically 92. He made a bunch of great moves. Robert Brooks, Antonio Freeman, I could go on and on. He made two moves to change that franchise. He traded for Brett Favre and he landed Reggie White. Go fast forward to the Ted Thompson era. He made one move that everybody disagreed with, by the way, at the time, that turned out to be absolute genius and change of franchise again, and that was drafting Aaron Rodgers in the first round when they had Brett Favre. Fast forward to Goody. These two moves are going to define who he is and how he's remembered as GM. One of them was drafting Jordan Love and basically, like you said, picking Jordan Love. We're willing to go with this guy. We're kind of tired of the drama with Aaron Rodgers, getting older. We know who he is, but we're going to go forward to Jordan Love. And then this trade right here. If this trade works out like the Reggie White move did in 1993, there'll be a street in Green Bay, Wisconsin, named after Brian Gutekunst. I mean, like, that's how they treat their guys up there. And it's always, and all three of those great GMs back to back to back, they've all been defined by one or two massive moves. And this is Goody's big move. This is his big move. Like, if you're playing a reality game show, Big Brother or something, that you got to make a big move at some point, right? This was his big move. And he had to. I think the perception of him was kind of that he was sitting on his hands a little bit, that he was happy to just keep folding, waiting for aces, right? Like, I just going to play a really, really conservative game here. Finally, he went all in on a bluff or whatever, you know, whatever poker term you want to use. And this is going to define him, because before this, I think Packers fans were a little antsy. Like, he hasn't made that big move. Why don't we land somebody big? Jacobs, McKinney, they're fine. They're great signings. And Jordan Love's been pretty good, but why won't he cash in some of his chips? And he finally did. And this is going to define him if this works out. This is going to be the moment we look back and say, Goody was kind of, like you said, playing chess when everybody else was playing checkers.
Oh, yeah. No, he pushed all of his chips in. He put his cards face up so the whole room could see it. And then he just stepped back from the table to watch the turn.
Not in a dangerous way. Not in a dangerous way. There are some teams that make moves like this. And you're like, boy, you better win this year because you're screwed after that. No, I don't think so. I don't think he mortgaged anything here. That's the beauty of this move. That's the beauty of having a roster as young and deep as they have.
By the way, if they name a street after him, can it please be Brian Street? Because nobody wants to try and spell his last name repeatedly. Nobody can do it. A couple of injury notes, too, for Packers fans to be aware of. This week marked the return of Jaden Reed and Wicks. They're both back from injuries sustained early in training camp. But let's keep in mind that right now we don't have injury participation reports, so we don't know how far back they are. And then even more importantly, Jordan Love says he's not worried about playing with the thumb injury. He will be wearing a brace, he expects, on the surgically repaired left thumb. What is important here is he talked a lot about, this is a quote, if you have no stability there, you have no strength as well. So it was pretty much just a limp thumb. I couldn't really do much with it, and it's just something that I wasn't before the season. I'm not trying to be dealing with that throughout the course of the season. Who knows if that would have kept getting re-injured, kept getting messed up, and who knows, that would have been going through a whole season. So I think, and the doctor's opinion was, just go ahead, get the surgery knocked out, try to get back to 100%. Again, it's his non-throwing hand, but still, these are stability things that you don't want to be worried about. So that is your Jordan Love update for the Packers on a day that, frankly, Packers fans are thinking about everything other than Jordan Love. There are other news and notes in the NFL. We'll get you caught up on some of the rest of the league's notes from today when we come back. It's Inside Coverage. Welcome back to Inside Coverage. He's Frank Schwab. I'm Jason Fitz. Some other news and notes throughout the course of the NFL day today. Not the least of which, Tyreek Hill back
other,
at practice.
Other things happen.
Well,
I can't believe.
Nothing else did. But Tyreek Hill participated in today's practice for the first time in 3 weeks. This is important here as he was limited in practice. He's on track to play in the season opener against the Colts, but he missed 3 weeks with what was described as an oblique injury. So this Tyreek Hill saga, let's just call it that at this point, like an injury different than drama, but it just feels like right now there's just a lot of hesitation as we all look at Tyreek to try and figure out what this year is going to look like for the Dolphins.
Yeah, and I don't want to turn this into a fantasy conversation because we have experts who are far smarter than I at that, but don't draft Tyreek Hill because Tyreek Hill has entered the it's always something aspect of his career. I believe that anyway. Look, he could put up 1,500 yards again. I don't know, but I'm not betting on that. I think it's just Tyreek is just one of those. There's always going to be something going on with Tyreek Hill from here on out. I thought the Dolphins missed their chance to get off the exit ramp. The moment Tyreek said after that game, hey, I want out of here. It's been fun, but I'm done. I think Dolphins should have been like, we've got to trade you, Tyreek. We got to trade you. What can we do? But they held on to him for a year, and I just don't see this working out well. There's been no good vibes with Tyreek Hill for basically since the end of the 2023 season. And I don't know if I'm being way too overdramatic here, but I just don't think this. I don't see Tyreek Hill having a great year with the Dolphins. I don't see him being a Dolphin in 2026. I don't see the Dolphins being a very good team. Period. This year, I just think it's kind of done. And this injury is probably out of his control. Like guys get injured and they come back for the opener, no big deal. But it's always something. I just think that's where it's going to be all season. It's always going to be something with Tyreek. We haven't heard the end of this.
It's always going to be something with the Dolphins. Like if we're being fair here, you know, the shine has just absolutely dulled on Mike McDaniel, hasn't it? Like it was funny and it was quirky and it was weird and it was awesome in the beginning because what we saw were incredibly creative offensive game plans and motion pre-snap and all of these different things that just looked different. And you saw it, and there was just a level of joy in the way the guys were playing, and you were getting the best out of everybody, and it just felt like something was right. And over the course of the last 18 months, it just feels like something is wrong, and it's always wrong. And it's like a bad relationship at this point where you don't really know when you should break up, but you know the breakup is coming inevitably. That's where I feel like we are at this point with the Dolphins and McDaniel, just because there's so much smoke from reports of, you know, players showing up late or not showing up at all. And some of the comments he's made about, you know, I can only do so much to motivate guys, all of these things. It's not quirky or funny anymore. And this just happens. This happens in the NFL. Like when somebody's a little different, it's embraced as long as the results are great. But the minute the results aren't great, we start asking questions. And I don't know right now if Tyreek Hill is going to ever be who Tyreek Hill was before, even though he's only 31. And in modern NFL wide receiver, Frank, 31 is not, you know, that's not the cemetery where we take the old folks out to die. Like 31 is still a reasonable age for productivity. It just doesn't feel like it is for Tyreek, which then is going to lead to questions about Tua, which is then going to lead to questions about coach. And it feels like we are just careening towards the end of this entire chapter for the Dolphins, and they missed their window.
Yeah, and I agree with you. 31 isn't, you know, a death sentence for an NFL wide receiver, but a 31-year-old who's relied on nothing basically but his speed the entire time, he loses a step. Like, it's the guy who's just throwing 101-mile-an-hour heat inning after inning, and all of a sudden he's throwing 97. It's like, it's still hard, but all of a sudden guys can hit you now. I think Tyreek, he just didn't look like the same guy last year. Maybe it was a wrist. He's talked about that. Maybe that's possible. He just didn't look as explosive. And that happens when you turn 30. Like, trust me, turn 40 gets even worse, Tyreek. Let me warn you about that. But yes, and I just think, look, maybe you have a different answer than me, but if you were to ask me which team is going to finish with a top 5 or 6 draft pick next year, who you're going to look back and say, yeah, I guess we could see that coming, but it's still a little bit of a surprise. I think it's the Dolphins. I think the Dolphins could really bottom out here. You look at how their team is constructed, and you basically traded Jonnu Smith the second he wanted any more money, and you traded away Jalen Ramsey, who's a really good player. Now you got Minka Fitzpatrick back, and he's really, really good. But you look at boy, Achan's already dealing with injuries. Zach Seiler's already dealing with some injuries. If Tyreek isn't the same dude, that puts the entire offense on Jalen Waddle. And I don't know that I really want that for Tua. So, and Tua himself has questions after last year where he kind of became just a check down guy. So if this goes bad for the Dolphins, I could see it going really, really, really bad to where you're just like, this is one of the five worst teams in the NFL.
I mean, Flores in his last two seasons went 10-6 and 9-8, and then he was gone. McDaniel at this point has gone 9-8, 11-6, and then last year's 8-9. And that 8-9 just never felt right. To your point,
you know what,
Fitz, if this
real quick,
truly goes off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to point out before we move on to anybody else. For me, you know what a warning sign was? And I've talked about this on the show, but it's been a while. They ran off Vic Fangio. The players were like, oh, this guy's too hard on us. We need to get rid of him. And all of a sudden you're like, Vic Fangio's gone for the Dolphins? I guess. Like, I thought Vic was a good coach, but maybe he's not a good coach anymore. Then he goes to the Eagles, and we were talking with dudes Super Bowl week who were like, I love playing for Vic Fangio. He gets the best out of me, and he is an unbelievable defensive mind. And the Eagles win a Super Bowl with Vic Fangio's defensive coordinator. And I'm just sitting there thinking the whole Super Bowl week, boy, the Dolphins could use a guy like this. Like, you ran off Vic Fangio? That's bad.
I talked to Cooper DeJean a couple of days ago. You can check that out on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. And we had it on Yahoo Sports Daily, which everybody should listen to from 9 to 11 a.m. Monday through Friday. But Cooper, when I talked to him, I asked him about Vic. And he said, he's really tough, which I love. I mean, that was one of the first things he said. He's like, he's tough, but he's a clear communicator, which I love. And everybody has to understand exactly what they're doing. And he talked about his pick six in the Super Bowl that's become such a famous play and why that play was only possible because two other people in the defense were doing the right thing at the right time in the right ways, which allowed him to get that interception. And, you know, there's a level of coaching and communication and just working your tail off that, man, you got to be wired for. And there is a question of when you look at a team, fair or not, that feels now like it's at some level sort of undisciplined. Now you got to ask yourself, all right, how much of this is the culture that's being created? Like, there is just a looseness to the way Mike McDaniel does everything. And I would argue that there feels like most times there's a looseness to the way the Dolphins are on the field, which works when you're winning. Again, we all love it. We all love players, coaches, and just this loose, fun energy when you're winning a bunch of football games. When you're not, all right, then you're going to start to say, okay, has it gone too far? And I think that's a fair question. Like, if Tua stinks this year and they end up with a top five draft pick, everybody's getting fired in that building. Literally everybody. And they're starting a massive rebuild, right?
Yep. Starting over quarterback and if they're as bad as I think they could be, and who knows? Like, look, they were 8-9 last year dealing with Tua missing games. Like, they weren't like some garbage team last year. They were pretty good and they got derailed by a quarterback injury. That does happen. But I just think the vibes there are so bad. And I don't think the roster is as good anymore. And they keep losing free agents every year. So you're right. There's no chance Mike McDaniel's back if they have some kind of I think if they lose double digit games, I don't think he'd come back. I don't think Chris Greer, their GM, would be back either. Just because, to use your term, what's the proof of concept that you guys are turning this thing around? It's going the other way. Like, 2 years ago, we felt pretty good. But even that 11-win season, let's not forget what the narrative was that year. They beat up on bad teams. They beat one team with a winning record all year. And it was the Cowboys at home on a last second field goal. Like, they caught a schedule break. Like, you can't believe it, beat 10 losing teams and they won 11 and got housed in the playoffs by the Chiefs. So I don't know. There's just nothing right now that gets me excited about the Dolphins. We could get to the season and Waddle, who I really, really like. Waddle could be awesome, and Hill could be his 2023 self. And Tua, who I've defended before for being a little underrated because people don't want to give him his credit, he could rebound, and Achan could be, like, all these things could happen. But it's a lot of what-ifs for one team, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and I'll always go back to something our buddy Mike Golick Jr. said to me a couple of years ago when we were chatting about the Dolphins. He said, how much did our perception change when they laid 70 on Denver? And I just think that's real. Yeah. The minute they laid 70, it was like, oh, McDaniel's an offensive genius. And it's like, okay, I also watched the Raiders lay a bunch of points on a Chargers team that still didn't prove that they were any good. Like, sometimes we just got to take those results, throw them away. One other piece of news from the same division. The Jets, apparently very high on Justin Fields. Do we like this? Their GM came out and said that he can follow in the Mayfield-Darnold trajectory, saying, quote, "I do believe Justin can be one of the guys. I've seen progress during this camp. Look forward to seeing the progress throughout the season as they all come together." It's his third stop in 3 years, three different coordinators, a lot of moving parts, so it does take time. Are you buying Justin Fields being the next Mayfield or Darnold, or I'll even throw Geno Smith into this conversation?
4 weeks ago, I might have said yes. I can't lie that the preseason has me a little shook. He was bad in the preseason. And that followed up camp reports of, hey, he's thrown a lot of incompletions, a lot of interceptions. The passing game doesn't look very good right now. So you add all this together and you say, is this just one of these preseason things that we're just going to forget completely? Don't forget, Ja'Marr Chase as a rookie, everybody's talking about how he couldn't catch a ball because it was a different ball than college, right? And Ja'Marr Chase went on to be the best receiver in the world. All of a sudden, you're like, is this what's happening with Justin Fields? Or is this a sign of things to come where he's going to get like people act like Justin Fields can't get benched. He can. Tyrod Taylor's behind him, I believe. Like, and he's a perfectly competent pro. And Aaron Glenn's not just going to take loss after loss after loss with his quarterback struggling. So I'm going to come on the side of, I think Justin Fields is going to have a good year. I don't think he's going to morph into some great passer. I just don't think he has that in him. But I will acknowledge when he played for the Steelers last year, he had his best season as a passer in many ways. A lot of the advanced metrics type of stuff put him at least as an average passer, a little bit above average in some ways, his best pure passing season ever. It's a short sample, but still he did it. We know he can run. We know Aaron Glenn really likes him from having to go against him a couple times a year as Lions defensive coordinator. I will say I think Fields has a good year, and I think the Jets have a pretty good year, better than expected. But man, I what do you make of the preseason? Because he was bad. Like the passing the ball, we just can't ignore that he was bad.
Yeah, it was. It looked bad. And the funny thing is, I heard Dan Orlovsky say it looks bad in part because they're staying so vanilla in the preseason that they're not doing the things that Justin Fields does well. I'll buy that. But also, I think it's of note that the offensive coordinator for the Jets is Tanner Engstrand, who was hired from Detroit, where he was a passing game coordinator and a tight ends coach. He's never been an offensive coordinator in the NFL. So he has plenty of NFL coaching experience. But part of what this takes is a little bit of give and take, right? Like anytime we see a redemption product at the quarterback position, I genuinely first look and say, okay, well, what was the coaching situation like? How did that happen, right? Sam Darnold went to one of the most quarterback-friendly head coaches in the NFL and somebody that is just repeatedly credited with just being brilliant at getting the most out of him. And he did that after coming from Shanahan, right? So, like, you have back-to-back really solid coaching situations that help him get that opportunity to sort of revisit who he is as a pro. And, you know, frankly, whatever we think of the ascension of Baker Mayfield, which I think Baker deserves a ton of credit for, it got Dave Canales a job and it got Liam Cohen a job. Just being an offensive coordinator sure for did. Baker sure gets people did. Jobs. So, like, there's a presumption that the coaching has to be great. I don't know what to expect from a Jets offense. Will the Jets be patient enough in their play calling to stick to what Justin Fields does the best, or are they going to try and make him be what they think he can be? I think that's a huge variable here that we can't know the answer to yet, Frank. And I can't have faith in the Jets until I've seen a little bit of what the relationship looks like between play caller and quarterback.
Yeah, and that's very fair. I mean, the coaching aspect of it is big. I mean, Aaron Glenn's a defensive guy. He's got to rely on his offense coordinator to get the most out of him. Let's real quick play this game. What's your order of finishing AFC East? Do you agree? I think you agree with me that Bills, Patriots 1-2. Who, Jets or Dolphins? Like, I think I'd take the Jets third in that division. I think I'm putting the Dolphins in last place.
Well, I feel like the Patriots, as you well know, I keep saying, I think they're probably a 6-7 win team that's better. So it's close to me.
Do the other teams get to 6 or 7? Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's the hard part about this. The Bills clearly win the division. And I think the Bills have a great shot at the number one overall seed because they're going to feast on a division that is feastable. I right now, I would probably lean Patriots in the 2 spot at 6 or 7 wins, then Dolphins, then Jets. I would love to see the Jets turn this thing around. I just, as I've said to you before, famously, the next time we see competence from the Jets will be the first time we've seen competence from the Jets. So I'm just hesitant. I'm just standing back here with my popcorn in my lawn chair, waiting for the tea. And I'm just like, let's see how this goes. And I hope the Jets have an absolutely incredible year. I just haven't seen anything to prove that.
Yeah, and when we talk about Jets, Dolphins, these teams not being able to get out of their way in many ways, we are reminded that it's not the reason the Patriots had a dynasty, but it certainly didn't hurt that nobody else in that division was any good for the 20 years that the Patriots were good.
Before we get out of here, we want to throw a congrats out to Travis Hunter and his wife, Leanna. By the way, they announced the birth of their son. Absolutely incredible. First child. They did it in a YouTube video titled Dear Son. So absolutely incredible moment for Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter is living the sort of chef kiss life that you can only imagine for any kid to get drafted, have his first kid, and know that he's about to make his NFL debut. And even importantly for so many fans, it looks like he'll be all cleared to go week one. All eyes will be on that. In the meantime, keep hanging out with Inside Coverage Monday through Thursday. We appreciate you watching. For Frank Schwab, I'm Jason Pitts. We'll see you soon.